I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5K run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral care is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Sonic Toothbrush and I love that it gives me that dentist clean feeling and is much more effective than a manual brush and less abrasive. Use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Why not pick up some perfect stocking fillers this Christmas and get them delivered straight to your front door? This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Claire Balding. After losing her hair to alopecia, Claire hit rock bottom. She speaks to me today about surrendering, the realities of motherhood, and why she always speaks her truth. Claire has kept us laughing through lockdown, but also showed such compassion for vulnerable people in our society by reminding people to check in on their neighbours, wear masks, and keep a safe distance. Claire always looks on the bright side of life. She finds a laugh in almost every situation, and her energy is infectious. She launched her business True A Hair this year and has so much to say about what really matters, what 2020 has brought to her life, and how we'll get through this time together. I hope you enjoy. Claire Balding, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for keeping us all laughing during lockdown. You've been an absolute tonic in such a crazy year. How has 2020 been for you?
God, mad. Like everyone else. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes I say, like, you know, people have been through so much this year that I feel even bad saying that it's been mad, you know, because actually I'm lucky. Like, I live around the corner from my mom and dad. I live around the corner from Ian's family. So I haven't had some of the struggles that, you know, everyone around the world, let's face it, have had, you know. So, but it's been crazy. Yeah, like trying to start a business, trying to keep kids entertained, trying to keep hedgehogs alive, trying to all sorts, you know. So it's definitely been challenging, but I think that I'm kind of one of those people, I wouldn't call myself a positive person really, but I would kind of, I suppose I try and take the best out of every situation that we're in. And actually, I have loved spending time with my family, even though I could kill them. Do you know what I mean? I loved spending those couple of months with Farah and Elliot, and they've just grown up so fast. You know, I can't believe it. So it's been nice to just actually take a stand, like a step back and say, what is it actually that I want for my life? Because we keep on going, and I've been going for I don't know how many years, you know, just to take that step back and that little pause and really reflect on what's important and what is it that I want to spend my time doing.
I was reading this article about things that you can do to kind of turn this time around and turn it into a positive with your family. It's like doing different things. So like, I really want to start kids yoga class or PE, or, you know, sit down and do little things together. But you guys, you were having discos in your kitchen and doing all these gorgeous things together. So I imagine, and your kids are at an age that they remember this time. So it must have meant being so special for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say that to Farah. Like, I actually was just telling the taxi driver on the way, I was saying to him that I thought Farah got through, she's 10. So I thought she kind of got through it easier because she can spell. So she could like text her mates on my phone for an hour a day. She could communicate with people still, whereas Elliot can barely spell his name, God love him. Do you know what I mean? He's nearly six, so he actually was very alone through that time, do you know? So I kind of felt more sorry for him. I was like, Farah's grand, she's on Roblox talking to her friends. But actually what's happened is, which is really strange, like Farah's very outgoing and bubbly, but the last couple of weeks I can see her kind of going into herself a little bit and kind of being a bit antisocial. And I wonder, is that because of what has just happened? Mm-hmm. Being able to communicate, but really only through, you know, a completely different vessel that she's used to. So now that she's full blown back in school and she's going to football again and all those kind of things, I'm like, you know, has that had an effect on her? But she says that to me, like, we're just saying, like, she says, like, I really loved lockdown. And I'm like, oh God. I'm like, don't say that to anyone, you know? Like, you know, she did. And I think we've made those mad memories, you know, together. And there was parts of me as well when we started to open up a little bit, that I'm like, okay, here we go again. I'm going to have to get back into work and pain, the, you know, just real life. So as painful as it was, and it was loads of pain, like Ian lost his granny to coronavirus and there was loads of pain through it. But yeah, I've really learned to appreciate those mad discos and memories that I've made over the past number of months.
And you would seem to me like you're a very social person. Mm-hmm. So have you missed the kind of human connection? And I imagine that's awful about Ian's granny to lose someone during this time. Like, how do you mm-hmm. grieve? How do you kind of get that human connection feeling?
Yeah, it was strange. All right. Yeah. And like, I am very social. I love people. I love chatting. I miss just my friends, you know. I just miss like being able to like touch another human. Like, yeah. My instant reaction was, you Georgie off Instagram, like, I want to give you a big hug, like, but we can't. But like, you know, like, I miss that physical contact, actually, which I'm not actually a real hugger, but now I kind of really want to hug somebody, you know. So it is difficult to navigate how, as a social person, how you Instagram's been great because I just blur, like, literally shout into my phone and then off I go and I'm fine again, you know. But yeah, losing somebody through this, like, I mean, Dolores was 80 odd years of age, you know, she lived a great life, but she's still someone's mom and someone's granny and someone's great granny and, you know, friend, you know. So it was horrible because you couldn't get into her, you couldn't see her. And like Ian's dad, like his mom, Ian's dad going in and in full PPE, and like, it was crap. I don't know if she totally understood at the end, you know, and she kept saying the bloody virus, you know, that kind of thing. But she couldn't, I don't know. And I would feel desperate that somebody was confused enough to think that there wasn't anyone there. Mm. There wasn't people wanting to go in and visit her. That's my scariest thought for people at the moment.
Because you have been really vocal about COVID on Instagram, and a lot of people, I suppose, are saying, you know, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to use my platform to tell people to wear masks and things. But you have faced it head on.
Too
and
far.
I'm sure you've felt a little bit of would it be like pressure back from people, like people giving you back their opinions and things like that, but you've held your head up high and you stand up for what you believe in. And I really admire that.
I think it's easier for me, actually, and I think that a lot of people would get in touch. Like, I have a lot of friends on Instagram that would get in touch with large audiences and say, you know, I wish I could say that, or I wish I could do that, but I can't. And I've opinions on that, whether you can or you can't. Yeah. So, but at the same time, I'm in a lucky space where I don't represent anybody other than myself. Okay. I'm lucky. I didn't go down the Instagram route of having to work with brands, having to do X, Y, and Z. So I'm actually a very liberated person on Instagram because I've allowed myself to do that. Now, that's good and bad in ways. But I get that people still have to pay bills. Like, I mean, people still have to work. People can't be as vocal. I don't always agree with that. No, I don't, you know, and I would be somebody who would say that and say it quite strongly as well and have the debates. And I don't mind that people have different opinions to me. I welcome that. That's what the world is made of. But I think that it's so important, whether or not you care enough or you think, you know, coronavirus is this rumor. Don't get me started. But regardless of that, we have to remember that there's people really struggling. So we need to think beyond ourselves. We need to think beyond hugging our friends. We need to think beyond whatever it is. People are really struggling with the virus or not right now. So we need to do our part. And I do believe that there's a lot more that people could do on Instagram, if I'm being honest.
Watching you, I suppose, in lockdown, like talking about your business, like, what a year to launch a business. How has that been for you?
To be honest, I actually, and I feel guilty about saying this as well, I think it helped actually a little bit, which is really strange. People were at home and people weren't going to the salon. They were like, oh, your one Claire Balding selling a bit of shampoo, we'll go on and buy one from her. I think that actually kind of helped in some ways, that, you know, people were maybe having, you know, not going to the pub, not going to a restaurant, not being able to send their kids drama class. They've that extra few euro, some people, the extra few euro maybe to say, do you know what, I'm going to buy that hair mask, or I'm going to start looking after it. So it's been weird. It's been really strange trying to do it. And this is totally new to me as well, like the business. I'm not built for it, actually. I'm really bad at it. I apologize for taking people's money. I feel so bad. I wish I could just give you the naloxone, but I can't. I'm crap at it. I'm really bad at it. But I've such a passion for hair, and I've such a passion for the repercussions of not having any. And I've such a passion for giving people time to moan about it, cry about it, grieve about it. I really believe that you have to give someone those couple of minutes to talk to them and to guide them through something and try and settle them down. And I wish there was more people out there for me when I was going through that. There wasn't actually. There wasn't really that many people talking very openly online when I went online, first of all. And I remember when I found you through, you know, just from people sharing and stuff. And I was like, that's what we need. We need more people, you know, raising awareness about things that are really bloody important that can change and completely alter someone's life, you know. And some people say it's just hair, but the repercussions of not having any hair questioned my life at times. So it's so bloody important. So to open a business that... It's hard because actually when I talk about hair loss, the tingling sensation comes over my head and I'm like, oh no. And literally it's just completely overwhelming. But I feel like I still have to go. I've loads of hair. I'll get over. I still have to do it. I believe that there's a reason why I came out. There's a reason of people watching me. So let's do our best here to make sure they're okay. So in terms of the business point of view, I'm not great at it, but we'll get there.
I really feel like you understand, obviously you understand what it's like to lose your hair, and you really understand people and the different emotions that you feel. Mm-hmm. So you lost your hair in 2016.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, like, that time. Did it fall out fast? Mm-hmm. Who did you go to?
Yeah, so I had even more hair than this, right? So loads and loads of red hair. And I hated my hair growing up because it was red and I used to get slagged and everything else. And it's so ironic then when it actually becomes your thing. So like people, you know, Claire with the red hair, like that's the way people would speak about me. So yeah, like, and because I had so much hair, a lot of it sheds. And it's very normal for us all to lose hair, 100 to 150 hairs a day, totally normal. But I felt, and particularly coming into the summer as well, like animals, we shed hair. So I was like, oh, here we go, the yearly kind of shed or whatever. So that was fine, but I kind of started to notice that it was everywhere. Do you know, like, I mean, that's not even what it is. I'd be walking to work and I'd see tumbleweeds of red hair like 5 minutes from my house. I'm like, that's mine. Like, I was like, is that my hair? Everywhere, like all over. Like, I used to kind of have to scoop it up and work and put it in the bin. I was like, no, Claire, that's a bit odd. But it wasn't until I found an actual bald spot, and it was where I part my hair. It was over here, and where I part my hair, and it was tiny. And I was like, gosh. And I went into work and I was like, what's that? And everyone was like, oh, you must have burned it with a straightener, or, you know, this kind of thing. Mm. But I remember one lady, Bernie, was like, that's alopecia. Oh my God. And I was like, what? She's like, that's alopecia. I was like, Bernie, shut up, you know? And then I went, so she scared me a bit. I was like, oh my God. I was like, no, that couldn't happen to me. Now my hair is lovely now. I was obsessed. Rang the doctor. Went down and she found like 5 big marks all over my head, coin shaped marks all over my head. So I said, like, what do I take, what do I have to do? And she just, there's nothing you can do. And I was like, no, come on, no. I was like, there has to be something I could do. There's absolutely nothing you can do. So I went home and then I saw them. I searched and I saw them. I was like, oh my God. So within that, in 3 weeks, I was in a wig. So I lost 70% of my hair in 3 weeks, which for someone with so much hair, like, it's a huge amount of physical hair. 70% I was in a wig, and then I went on to lose, like, in total I lost 85%. So I had like no hair on top and a little kind of, I actually can feel, this is my old hair. Nobody can see me except for Cassie and Georgie. But I have a tiny little bit that's my old hair and nearly everything else is gone. I had little tiny random bits, you know.
What did you say to Ian that day? Jamie was amazing when I lost my hair. What did Ian say to you?
I think I actually, when I look back now, I could see him. He was so scared because he was like, what's wrong with her? Like, what is she whole? Like, because the whole thing is stress, right? But I was obsessed with the fact that I was not stressed. I was adamant that that's not it. It can't be that. Like, I'm grand. It can't be that. What is it? So Ian, I think, was kind of, you know, going through his own kind of turmoil, is she okay? What isn't she telling me? Like, what, is she all right? And then just, you know, he was so sad to see me so sad, you know. And I always say this, like, Ian was brilliant. Like, thank God for the great men in our lives. Like, we're so lucky because some people don't have that support. But he would just do stuff like, I'd come in from work and like the dinner beyond the place be like half clean. And I took it for granted then because I'd go upstairs and I'd collapse because I've all day with my wig on. Hi, pretended I was okay, working away. I was the breadwinner, had to go to bloody work. But Ian would just do these subtle, like he'd clean the house. Like, I didn't notice it back then, but actually that was the kindest thing that he could have done. It was like, now she is on the edge here. What can I do to make her life a little bit easier? And that was clean the house, get Farah's kit ready for football, you know, bring Elliot here and there, you know, like those things. And people often ask me, what do I say to somebody that's losing their hair? And there's nothing really you can say, but please don't avoid it.
Acknowledge it.
Acknowledge it. Put your hand, well, if you can touch them, put your hand on them and just say, how are you? Don't avoid people. Like, people used to cross the street to avoid me, like, because I was in my little wig running around Marino. Like, they used to cross the street, like neighbors, friends of mine. They were like, oh, I don't know what to say to her. I don't know how I can comfort her. And in parts of me loved it, because I don't have to talk to anyone, so I just run home, you know, and avoid them. But looking back, it was such a selfish thing to do, and it wasn't their fault. It's just, I don't actually think we're ever taught that, like how to be empathetic or how to, you know, deal with somebody else's pain. It's a really hard one, actually, to kind of try and understand. But when I look back on it, Ian was sad, really. Mm. That was it. And confused, I think.
And
confused.
When you get diagnosed with alopecia, like, are you kind of wondering if there's anything else going on? Like, do you get a reason for it happening? Or yeah. Do they just say stress?
It depends. Like, so the GP, like, I'm going to be honest, is absolutely useless. And I went to a few and they didn't have any answers for me at all. But then I went to a trichologist. I went to a dermatologist. It was like 6 week wait. Like, I had VHI insurance. It was still a 6 week wait to see a dermatologist. And I just knew myself that I'd be bald. So, I went to a trichologist and she just said to me, like, this is pretty bad. It's alopecia areata, which is the most kind of, I won't say curable, the most treatable, let's say. But it was a very severe case of it. So she was like, it's going to get worse before it gets better. But she said, your hair will grow back. But I didn't believe her. You know, I was like, yeah, right. She just wants me €100. But I that did, like, you know, when I look back at it, it did calm me as well. Like, so I was like, okay, so what, tell me what I need to do. And I did everything she told me that I needed to do. And I've hair again. Do I think that that's the reason why my hair came back? I don't think so completely. I think actually vocalizing the pain of it and documenting it was such a great outlet for me, you know, to be able to say that. Because pain, I believe you have to let it out. Mm. I don't think it's not good for it to be inside. That's why I'm such a bloody mouth, you know. If I feel something, I have to say it, because then it's done. I'm not a person that dwells on things. I don't have grudges, regrets, nothing like that. You just have to do it. Release the pain and just try and mend yourself.
But, and take time to like look in the mirror when you were bald, or did you avoid the mirror?
I did this thing called mirror work, which I actually was talking about on Instagram a little while ago. I used to avoid the mirror for months. Like, I couldn't look at myself. Like, it's funny because you just can't recognize yourself. You know, you've been there. Like, I couldn't see Claire anymore. I couldn't. She completely disappeared. And actually, it wasn't the hair. It was everything about me. I'd lost my bit of spark that I had. I'd lost anything that resembled me. But then for the first time ever, I actually saw myself when I looked in the mirror. I was like, all right, you kind of half decent eyelashes. Your eyes are a nice color. You're going to get over this, right? And I remember going, for the first time ever, I was like, oh, there you are. Okay, let's start again. And from that instance on, my hair started to grow. Now, again, complete fluke probably, but I remember the day I was about to give up and I didn't. And I went to the appointment again and she took off my wig and there was hair all over my head. And I would put €1 million if I had it on like this story that there was no hair there that morning. When I went and looked, I was like, oh, here we go. Put on the wig, blah, blah, blah. Went to work, but I was about to give up on everything. I was about to completely just go into myself and give up. And I just took off the wig. There was hair all over my head. And sometimes I think that you need to do that with a bit of pain as well. You need to let it go. You need to come to a place where you understand that, okay, for whatever reason this is happening to me right now, I've two choices here. I either sink or swim. And sometimes you have to go down that low to kick yourself off the riverbank again and actually take a bloody breath. And I would, as I said, I put money on it that there was no hair in my head that day. And it was because I let it go. I said, Claire, you can walk, you can talk. Fortunately for everyone, you can walk, you can talk. You have beautiful kids. You have a gorgeous husband who loves you, hair or not. Get over yourself. And that was the instance that I actually just, there was hair all over my head.
And that's so interesting because I really believe in surrendering to something, mm-hmm. in order to be able to move on.
Yeah.
Like I surrendered. It's not the same thing at all, but I surrendered from my job in radio. Mm-hmm. Like it was taking everything from me.
Yeah.
And one day I just said, you know what? I just can't do it anymore. They accepted my resignation. And then 2 hours later, I got my first paid job of my business. But I had to give it all up in yeah. order to kind of move on and get that next gig. And sometimes just surrendering is so important.
Absolutely.
So you're saying that the day you surrendered was the day that lady said there's hairs growing on the back mm-hmm. of your head.
Yeah.
And like in that, I remember as well seeing little hairs on the top of my mm-hmm. head. It was a week after my last chemo session. And I didn't stop looking in the mirror that day. Like yeah. I loved those little white pieces yeah. of fluff. Like, isn't it the most amazing feeling?
The most amazing.
And not just because your hair is coming back, because no. it means that you're well.
Yeah. It means that, do you know, I struggle with that a little bit because I loved seeing them and I used to pet them and I used to, especially when my hair was a bit longer then after a couple of weeks or whatever, and I just loved them and I used to put my hand underneath my wig and just feel them and I loved it so much, but I was terrified by them as well because I was like, they might go again, because right. that was the issue with alopecia mm. is that, you know, there's no real answer here, so you're going to try and hold on to these for your life, but they'll probably go again. And I have had spots of alopecia since then, you know, so it was tainted for me because it was great, but I was so scared, you yeah. know. And actually what was really odd was when my hair grew back, and I remember it got to a certain point and I got extensions in and I looked like a chubby Rod Stewart. I looked ridiculous, okay, like I looked awful, but like I just had to take off the wig. I was just, that was the end of it now. I've done with it, bye. Thanks, Emil. You served your purpose. I don't like you anymore. I went around looking mad, completely mad for a couple of months. But I remember actually then people forgetting that I wasn't okay. And I was like, oh, they think I'm okay now. This is concerning because I really wasn't. And I still am probably in some ways. But that's, I think, the kind of the issue with it as well, that I felt then, oh, you're going to forget that I'm not that okay. Like yeah. I couldn't say it. That was my bloody issue in the first place. I couldn't tell anybody that I was in pain. So my hair fell out. So that was my body saying, guys, this girl's struggling over here. And then when my hair came back, people, oh, it's grand now. Or even when I got the wig, sir, it looks like your hair. What's the problem? It's grand now. I'm like, no. And there was no other way of me telling people that I'm really struggling, actually. I find this difficult. There was no other way of me then mm. except for into my phone to complete strangers. And I say it, it's so dramatic. I've said it a couple of times, that Snapchat saved my life. Because if I wasn't accountable every day, there was people out there going, where's Claire? I hope she's all right. And I still find it, and I think I always feel very difficult to speak to my mom or my best friend or Ian. Actually, Ian I can, unfortunately for him, but I find it difficult to say I'm not okay, I'm struggling. I find that hard to people that are close to me, but I find it incredibly easy to tell strangers. And mm-hmm. even in person, you know, like the taxi driver, come here and I tell you, do you know, like I can divulge things to people that I don't really know. I find that a lot easier because I think the root of that is that I don't want to hurt the people I love. I don't want to, they have enough on their plate. Why am I worrying them even more? And we all mm-hmm. do it. I'm not going to tell my mom this, or I can't tell this person this because she'll worry about me or he'll worry about me. But that's why we love people, is that we have that. That's the risk we take, isn't it? That's the kind of burden you take on when you love someone, is that there's going to be hard times too. And I struggle with that. Mm. But if it wasn't for having to talk into my phone, and then I felt, what happens is I went into that community to try and draw strength from it, right? I tried to, someone's going to offer me a hair transplant. Here we go, right? Get the numbers up. Someone's going to give me something for free, a wig, you know, all this stupid stuff. But then actually people started to draw strength from me. And I felt this responsibility then to go on every day. And I felt this responsibility to, yeah, check in with them and tell them that I'm okay, you know, and I'm struggling with this, or it's silly, mundane stuff that I talk about every day. But it's the accountability of them seeing me. I'm all right. I'm here. We're doing our best. Hope I make you smile today.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. But first, I wanted to give you an update on my Spotlight Oral Care Teeth Whitening Strips that I'm wearing for an hour a day for 2 weeks. Now that my aligners are gone, I'm really keen to whiten my teeth and have a healthy smile. And I've seen instant results. Spotlight Oral Care has something for everyone and was founded by two dentists, so you can be rest assured that the products are safe and effective. They are free from toxins, cruelty-free and palm oil-free, and their toothpaste tubes are 100% recyclable. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more. Now, back to my conversation.
It's so interesting what you say, and that's been kind of, and a few people have said it on this season of the podcast, Julie Ledwidge as well, that when you get better, in inverted commas, people are like, come on now, you're better. You know, like I'd sit and work like feeling like such an alien, like a completely different person to what I was before. I'd be in the bathroom like checking my breasts, going out reading a news bulletin, like crying at my desk, like just I was a basket case. But it was so hard for people when they saw me looking like myself again to kind of, it's like they, people wanted to shake me and go, get it together, you're fine.
Yeah.
But I just never felt like I was fine. Do you think that it took you a long time to get over it or deal with it or process it?
Yeah, I think I still am. I think that what I suppose, like, I would be someone like, you know, that would suffer with bouts of depression, you know, and I think that I could never say that out loud because I was so ashamed of that for so long, you know, and I think that but my hair falling out actually did me a big bloody favour, you know, and like that, actually, one of the GPs, she said to me, as I just said, like, isn't it funny how your body picked that? Like, it could have, I could have got really bad skin. I could have got, you know, like put on loads of weight, lost loads of weight. Like something else physically could have happened to me and I would have just carried on. But my hair woke me up and my hair was so shocking to me because that's one of my best physical traits, I thought, you know. So I think that, yeah, I think that I really kind of, I still find it hard, but I have learned how to cope with things. You know, people say now, what are you opening a business for? Your hair's going to fall out again because you're so, you'd be so stressed. And I don't, like, you can't avoid stress. But I've this vessel now and I understand how my body and my mind works a little bit. And those outlets for me are amazing. And that's how I deal with it. You can't avoid things in your life. You can't avoid stuff because it's going to make you feel X, Y, or Z. And I feel like I still struggle with being able to talk about my feelings to my mom or to my best friends. But I'm well able to talk to a stranger about it. And they're like, oh, if it helps you, do whatever.
Yeah.
Just, you know, whatever you want, you know, just make yourself okay.
And so, what do you think that your hair falling out was trying to tell you?
I think it was to take a breath. Like I had Farrah when I was 23. Just completely unplanned. Me and Ian were together 5 years at that stage anyway. So we were very much, oh, this is going to happen for us, you know, and we our life got fast forwarded like completely. And I think for 7 years, I didn't really take a breath. And I had Farrah, we like bought a house at 23. We got married. We had Elliot when I was 27. And like, that's a lot of stuff, right? A lot of big life changes to fit into 7 years. And we were still so young. Like, I think that I coped genuinely well with it. Like, we talked to it like, you know, and we were genuinely happy. But I think that all of that pressure of trying to prove to people, no, I can do that, actually. I'm grand. My mom, I remember, never forget the day I told my mom I was pregnant. Like, it was, oh my God. I got such a wallop over the head as well. And she hugged Ian. I'm like, hello. But like, you know, I had such this, no, I won't disappoint you. Please give me a chance. I'm going to be able to do this. And I think I couldn't stop trying to prove myself to people. And then all of the normal pressures, there's nothing significant that sticks out at me. I think that that's why my hair fell out. I think it was just this abundance of life. Like, it's really hard to have kids. It's really hard to pay a mortgage for X. It's really hard actually to do all these things. And you're able to and entitled to be a little bit stressed out at times. Why is it so shameful? Why is it... It's okay to say this is kind of difficult, actually. And I think people struggle with that so much because we're pretending that it's easy. And I don't care what anyone says. It's none of that's easy. Getting married's not easy. Like, none of it. Allow, like, you know, I just think that we're very bad at that. We're very bad at saying, I'm not okay.
I think especially for mums.
Yeah.
I think when you become a mother, like you want to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I remember like when I had Pia, just being so tired, mm-hmm. and the breastfeeding and putting yourself under pressure and the night feeds. I remember like I used to have like hallucinations and stuff in the middle of the night. I remember I used to see like black dots, like just the exhaustion of having a baby. Babies is intense.
Yeah. And then you're like, but we have to be like in baby yoga 10 with a chai latte and we're down 5 pounds. Like, you know what I mean? It's this constant stress and it's constant pinning ourselves against each other. But for what, do you know? Yeah. And it's just this pressure. And I think all of that kind of built up. And I had no one, like none of my friends had kids. So it was this kind of weird life. We loved it, but it was hard sometimes. I think that, and on top of the exhaustion, like Elliot, oh my God, he did not sleep. I had two bad sleepers, but Elliot was particularly bad. Like I remember I used to walk home and I used to nearly be tearing up because it would start to get dark and I'd be afraid of the night. I'd be afraid of the hallucinations, the tiredness, because I'd have to go and get up and go to work the next day. And I remember one day I went into work and I'd say, honestly, I had like a half an hour sleep. But I had to go in and I was the chirpiest person in the office. I did the best job. I made sure everyone else was okay. But inside I was like, I had to go into the bathroom and I was so faint. I was so tired. And then 3 months later, my hair fell out. So it's no joke exhaustion. It's so bad. So I really think that when people say that, like, what was it that was the stress? I'm like, everyday life and utter exhaustion.
Yeah. And it's something as well that I think many people suffer in silence with. Like the nights are long when you're sitting there with baby.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what was your relationship with your wig like? I remember we were on a flight to Spain and Jamie got a tap on the shoulder. And my wig was handed up through the seats I remember I was quite comfortable with taking it off. I was like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like people will just get over it. Mm-hmm. But I'd kind of lose it sometimes or like it would be in a hat or something. They'd say to me like, come in and get your blow dries. And I was like, I couldn't be arsed driving my wig down to get a blow dry. Like, I don't have the time or I don't care enough. But what was your relationship with your wig like?
I think I mean, I had no hair. I lost 70% of my hair and I still didn't have a wig, right? So I had no hair. And I was sitting in my bed with like hair all over the place. I don't know what I thought. Like, I remember at one point I was like, I'll do a wig making course now. I'll just knit all of this together and pop it back in my head. My mom's like, no, Claire, we'll just go and get you a wig. Oh my, the stuff that went through my head. But I remember going and I think my mom was more scared than me, you know. I kind of had to tell her, you need to take a breather, get out. Like, you know, she was kind of a bit all over the place. But I loved her. I loved it and I hated it in equal measures.
Yeah.
I hated the smell of her.
Mm.
Even though I wash it every bloody 2 weeks, whatever you're supposed to do. And when we were allowed, hugged people, I can smell they're wearing a wig. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It makes me feel sad when I smell it. I don't know what it is, but it makes me feel pain.
And did you find it? I used to find it kind of hard to make eye contact with people, not my friends or family, but say I went to a shop or something.
Mm-hmm.
I would just rather not make eye contact in the wig because I just didn't want to go there with a person or see the minute where they realize.
Yeah.
And I remember like when I'd go back, like took off my wig and had my hair, I was like, oh God, like I'm back to myself again.
Yeah.
And did you keep your wig?
Yeah, I still have it.
Yeah, same.
I suppose like it's kind of, I might need it again as well. Like I'm not under any illusion that I might not need it again, you know? So it wasn't something, and they're bloody expensive, let's face it as well. But it wasn't something that I could, I'll ever really part with. And for loads of different, like I've two, like, you know, and I keep them there. But next time, because there probably will be a next time, but next time I lose my hair, I think I'll go a bit mad because everyone will know that I've lost my hair. It's this thing of, I never really cared, but I didn't want to put somebody else in an awkward position. I didn't want them to go, oh, Jesus, what do I say to her? And I used to get it all the time. Are you sick? And I remember going, no. And over the top saying no, but actually in my head going, yes, you are, Claire. You're really ill. Really ill. but you can't say this, you can't tell anybody this, you can't ask for help. But I just stick a wig on and kind of get over it, you know.
And did it change then how you lived your life? Like, do you see it as a before and after?
Yeah, it did. It taught me to completely be myself. It taught me to be because it happened to me, I really take purpose out of pain a lot, right? So as I was saying, I feel like that happened for a reason. I feel like my hair fell out to wake me up to something, to make me live a different way, you know? And I really truly believe that there's only, you know, one Georgie Crawford. There's only one Claire Fulham. There's only one. And I'm going to just be her, actually. I'm not going to be anything else that you want me to be. My mom hates it. Ian hates it. But actually, I can't help myself. And that's the most liberating way to feel. I can't help being me. And I'm actually really happy with the person I am. And that's what it's taught me. So as much as I'm, you know, it's been tough and it's tough at times, it's made me into the person I am. And I really feel like, you know, checking in with people on Instagram, the feedback that you get, the little tiny little bit of joy. Am I so lucky that I can give that to somebody or change someone's mind on something or get someone to think about something for a second? The voices we have, I would have never found that voice if it hadn't have been for my hair.
And what's it like when you get messages from people being like, you gave me such a laugh today and that's exactly what I needed?
Yeah, you know, you'll get them as well, Georgie. I get these kind of like soppy texts every now and again. And I glimpse at it and I can't read the whole thing, actually. It gets totally overwhelming to me that somebody would say something so kind to me. It does. Like, and, you know, I prefer the bad ones. I prefer, I'm like, all right, here we go, rolling up the sleeves. But I can't even cope with them, right? But then somebody will just say, Claire, you're mad you gave me a laugh today. I love those ones.
Yeah.
I don't need people, you know, it's so nice of them to take the time, but I don't need people to, you know, pump up my ego. It's big enough, right? I need someone. I'm so happy that I made you laugh today. That's job done. And connecting people from all over the world. There's so many people all over the world that won't get back for Christmas this year and saying, I can see it in Fairview Park and I remember. And, you know, just giving somebody a little taste of home, because I'm a very Dublin gal, you know, and a very wicked sense of humour and very unapologetically, you know, mad. And I think that's comforting to some people. Pisses others off. But I think it's comforting to some people. So if that's all I do, I'm delighted.
And tell us then about Trua. Where did you come up with the name for it?
Trua means compassion in Irish. So I really felt like hair loss is something that you need to have full compassion for. And I think that I have unfortunately met and given my money to all sorts of people along this road, right? And I really feel like there needs to be a very, very wholesome space to deal with this, because it's very intricate and it affects so many people. It's a huge amount of people. Temporary hair loss, complete and utter hair loss. And I think that, you know, there needs to be somewhere for people to feel safe in that space. So yeah, true. It's online at the moment. And again, lockdown changed my mind. So I was like, right, saving all the pennies. I'm like, I'm opening a full-blown clinic. I'm trained to be a trichologist at the moment, which is great. But I'm like, I'm going full-blown with this. I'm going to have people coming in. It's going to be private. It's going to be this, it's going to be that, because that's what there's a gap in the market for that. But lockdown taught me, do I really want to employ 12 people? Do I really want to deal with all of that stress? Do I really want to do that? Because Claire, you have to look after yourself too. So we kind of paired the business back then and said, okay, now hold on a second. Let's do consultations online. Let's do sell online and let's do our very, very best for people. And that's all I'm going to do for now, because I have to look after myself. There's so much pressure in staff and running a business and all that kind of stuff that I don't want it. Even though I'd be able to get myself a Land Rover. Even though I'd be able to put my extension on my house. Even though I'd be able to clear that bleeding credit union loan. Even though, that's not success to me. Success is just being bloody happy and enjoying myself with my family and friends. That's it. So it's really taught me that. And I'm grateful for that, because it's woken me up to, do you know, like, I'm able to come here on a Friday morning, do you know? And I wouldn't be able to do that if I had 12 staff and fucking six of them gone on maternity leave at the same time and calling sick. And I would not arsed. But I'm going to be there for people and I'm going to do it a different way.
Yeah.
But it has to suit me.
It's funny, isn't it, that that's, I think, what 2020 has given a lot of people. So before lockdown, I was speaking at events and driving here and going there. And like, it was all just getting mad again.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And
I think it's what 2020 has shown us is like, well, actually, come on, what is actually important here? Yeah. And just focus on the things that give you joy. Like, my podcast gives so much to my life, and I'm so happy that through 2020 I've just absolutely concentrated on that mm-hmm. alone mm-hmm. and grown the kind of core of my business, which is yeah. like for you as well. And I think it's really important to listen to that little voice in your head that's saying this is too much to take on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the things that we give up, that extra couple of euro in the bank account, or that just the things that we give up, they're totally outweighed by all the things that we gain from just having a Saturday and a Sunday with your family or being able to knock off early on a Friday, or being able to just chill and enjoy yourself. Because actually, you'll get through anything. We've learned that. You'll get through things. Things are really bad sometimes, but there's always light at the end of the tunnel. There's always something, an epiphany and a lesson to be learned here. And let's calm down. I think if we did less, we'd achieve more. But I think that's taught 2020, as you said, is completely, it's been a lesson.
And how do you feel, I'll leave you with this question, how do you feel looking in the media and reading things online about Christmas being cancelled and them saying, you know, Christmas is going to be cancelled? Surely this Christmas has the potential to be more special than ever before.
Yeah, the best one yet. Like, you know, I think that bit of scaremongering going on there, let's face it, you know, to clickbait and all the rest. But I think that actually has the potential to be the best one yet, as you said, you know, and really kind of paring back what matters to people. And you know what I think we should do as well is get out of our bloody box, right? And be empathetic and sympathetic to the people that won't get home this Christmas. Mm-hmm. So make a bloody effort to make sure they're okay, you know. Pick that neighbour, you know, from China up the road. Pick the Polish family around the corner. Pick the people that are going to suffer a little bit this Christmas. There's no getting away from that. Or that lady across the road and whoever lives, or, you know, that person that will be a bit lonelier this Christmas. There's nothing better than doing something for somebody else, you know, and Christmas would be made if they thought that Georgie across the road made that effort for me. Be more of a neighbour. Be there for someone. Knock on someone's door, socially distanced, of course, but just be there for people. Get out of our little bubble. Relax. What's important, actually bringing those little gingerbread men over to that family would make their Christmas for them. So things like that, I think we need to get back to basics, really care about each other and really try and make that effort for other people.
And have you gotten to know your neighbours a little bit more during this time? It's been lovely, hasn't it? It's so nice.
Yeah. And particularly we're all working, we're all running around and we drop the kids and we're racing. And it's just so nice, even like out and about, like in your area, like not even next door neighbour or whatever, but just out and about. And I remember trying to go to the shop, but it would take me like 2 hours because like you'd meet somebody and Ian be like, there's fucking main commies, the Mayor of Marino, here she goes again, Mayor of Marino, going around. And I couldn't get because I kept talking to people, but I was like, what are you in a rush for, Claire? You're just going to go home and empty the dishwasher. Andrew is on his own in his house. Talk to him for 20 minutes. Do you know what I mean? That will make his day. Talk to people, like, be friendly. I just don't get it. I'm over now. I'm over my old life of busy, 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 money, money, money. Over it. I really just want to enjoy my time that we have and just be a feckin' nice person. That's what 2020 has taught me, Georgie.
Claire, I can't thank you enough. I love that you care about what really matters. Mm-hmm. And I've learned so much from you today on this podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your story
with
me.
Thank you. Thanks a mil.
Thanks for listening to the Go Glow podcast, with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. It would really mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford or head over to my website, thegoodglow.ie.